Hi, welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. It is Monday, January 30th, and I'm Jessica Steinberg. I'm joined today by political correspondent Tal Schneider and military reporter Emmanuel Fabian. Hello, good morning.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi there. We are still in the aftermath of the terrorist attack that took place Friday night, killing seven, and a series of other attacks on Saturday. We'll talk about what's happening on that front, as well as the continued push for judicial reform at the Knesset. Before we jump into all of that, we're going to take a quick break.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you care about the war in Israel right now. And you've been reading the headlines, massacre in Gaza, genocide perpetrated by Hamas. No, by Israel. But if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know one thing. This stuff seems complicated. And honestly, no one can really just pick a side or decide an opinion without really learning, without really knowing what you're talking about. And that's where this podcast comes in. Check out Unpacking Israeli History, now in its sixth season. They have episodes with topics ranging from what is Hamas anyway, to whether Israel should ransom captured soldiers, and the history of Israel and its disengagement from Gaza in 2005. Unpacking Israeli History cuts through the noise and helps you understand Israel's present through understanding Israel's history. So, educate yourself. Learn the history behind the headlines. Find Unpacking Israeli History wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Okay, Manny, tell us what has been happening since the terror attack. I know that you were in Ramallah yesterday for a briefing with Defense Minister Yoav Gallant. What did he have to say? Or perhaps maybe let's start with what are some of the details of what we're seeing now after the terrorist attack?
So in response to the attack, we've seen quite a few moves by the army and by the police. So firstly, the home of the terrorist in East Jerusalem was sealed. It was closed shut. His family was basically kicked out of the home. The army is deploying additional troops. The police are investigating several people in connection to the attack. And we're seeing calls by the defense minister, by other politicians, for potential moves against the family of the terrorist or other terrorists and anyone else who supports the move. So firstly, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, he spoke to reporters at the IDF's West Bank headquarters. It's just on the outskirts of the settlement of Beit El. It overlooks Ramallah. And he told reporters that Israel's looking to calm things down, but will not hesitate at all to act against terror. And he basically threatened, he said, if needed, we will demolish their homes. We will deprive them of their rights. If needed, we will expel them, he said. And he said that every terrorist will either go to court or the cemetery. So he's basically looking here, and the security cabinet a day earlier as well said that they are looking at potentially deporting family members of terrorists that support the acts of the attacker, denying them social security rights and other moves.
What does that mean, actually, Manny? Break it down for us. Actually, in fact, go back to sealing the house. What does that actually mean?
So in general, Israel has a policy of demolishing or sealing homes of Palestinian attackers who are accused of committing a deadly attack. If people are killed, then Israel will move to demolish the home. Now, in general, this is a process that takes several months. So what usually happens is the army will notify a family of an attacker that Israel wants to demolish the home. The family can then appeal to the court. The court may accept some sort of compromise that only parts of the home used by the attacker will be demolished. In some cases, it's impossible to demolish it if it's like an apartment in a building, and then they will seal it instead. And this is a process that takes a while, and then often also the army will pick a kind of a specific date when to conduct the demolishing operation for all sorts of security concerns. And as well, it also needs to map out the home to figure out the best way to demolish it or seal it if it's not possible to demolish it. So what has happened in this case is ministers in the new government have been pushing to immediately seal the homes, not with a complicated concrete filling, but rather just welding the doors and windows shut to not enable anyone to enter, and then later on go through the long process of actually eventually demolishing it. So in response to the attack, a day later, police forces did enter the East Jerusalem neighborhood of Atur, and basically welded the doors shut, sealed the windows, kicked the family out of the home, even though some of them have actually been detained, but kicked whoever else was currently living in the home out, and then they will work later on to potentially demolish the home.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And now take us to Defense Minister Gallant's comments. I think this was probably his first official press conference after an event, after an incident. Is that true?
Right. Yeah, I believe this is his first. He's issued statements before, but hasn't invited journalists yet to properly talk. But he held an assessment at the West Bank headquarters. They discussed there all the potential responses and what's going on the ground. The army has deployed three additional battalions to the West Bank, and then two companies have been deployed to assist the police in the Jerusalem area and in kind of towns on the West Bank security barrier area. So Gallant, like I mentioned before, he issued these comments. He said Israel will act decisively and forcefully against anyone who threatens our citizens. But he also said we want a better future for the Palestinian population, for anyone who behaves according to the law. So kind of playing at both sides here and saying that we will go through with these, I would say, quite drastic measures of deporting people or demolishing homes, but also saying anyone who is actually not involved or doesn't support kind of terrorist attacks would basically not be harmed in this.
Deporting. What does deporting mean? We've never heard that.
Right. So deporting to the Gaza Strip of families of attackers is quite a rare move, I would say. I believe after the kind of Gilad Shalit deal in 2011, terrorists themselves were deported to Gaza, but I don't think family members of terrorists were deported outside of the country. It's a very unusual move, and there has to be some sort of legal precedent to actually go forward with that. Meanwhile, after the attack, police arrested around 50 people in connection to the attack, or maybe possibly knew of the attack intentions, despite police saying that he acted alone. Most of them have been released, but right now, the mother of the terrorist who killed seven in Neve Yaakov is still being held, as is a cousin, two other, I believe, acquaintances or neighbors of his in the area in Atur, and then one more Palestinian from the West Bank is also being held. So in total, five are still being held, and they are still being questioned over their knowledge, possibly of the attack intentions.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that, Manny, for that update. We're going to take a quick break. When we're back, Tal will talk to us about what is happening on the judicial reform front.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their blankie, their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel Story wherever you get your podcasts.
So we're back. Tal, talk to us about what is happening on the judicial reform front, which, of course, is still very much in the headlines. It's been pushed a little bit back because of the terrorist attacks that took place over Shabbat, over the weekend. But what is happening and what are we hearing specifically from Knesset Law Panel Chair, Knesset member Simcha Rotman, who has put forward a little bit of an abstract of the judicial reform that looks a little bit different than what Justice Minister Yariv Levin has been planning. What can you tell us about that?
Right. So one of the most interesting things at the moment is that the Constitutional Committee in the Knesset is pushing really, really strong to move forward with the legislation pretty fast. In one of the claims of Likudnik, people from the Likud and from the right-wing coalition, was after the horrible Friday night massacre outside the synagogue in Jerusalem, the coalition and people from the right wing said, how do people from the left wing are still going to demonstrations? Why are they doing it? Don't they feel they need to put a stop because people were killed and so on? And the people on the left said, if you will hold and you will, slow down your legislation because of the victims, we will maybe slow down our demonstration. Now, Jessica, this is not happening. The coalition is running very strong with the legislation. They're not putting any stop to it. Right now, this morning, they continue to have discussion in the committee. And one of the most interesting things is that the legal advisor for the committee, advocate named Gur Bly, has been in the Knesset for many, many years. He's very experienced in constitutional changes. He came up on Sunday morning with a legal advice, legal counseling to the committee, and said, this is major shift in Israel constitutional regime, and therefore it should not take place just now, in this Knesset. It should take place after the next election. That, obviously next election can take place in 4 years or 3 years. We don't know that. So this is very harmful to Simcha Rotman, the chairman of the Constitutional Committee, because obviously they want everything to be done quickly right now and in effect next month or so. So that was interesting because part of this reform or overhaul or, some people call it a coup, some of the content is to limit the possibility of legal advisor to give, legal counseling, such as Gur Bly. So if this reform will pass, the Knesset may, the Constitution Committee may say, okay, this is your opinion. We don't have to take it. We can appoint our own political legal advisor. I mean, it's not something that can happen so quick, but, it's like when you hear what I'm trying to explain to you, the legal advisor of the Constitution Committee is right now talking in the Knesset against the chairman of the committee. Again, a very troubling or very conflicting event to listen to all of those opposing ideas. He basically, as I said, what he said is don't, push it so quick and don't push it to take effect in a month. If you want to, you want to have a change of Israel regime, make sure it happens in the next Knesset so people can vote whether they like it or not.
But then there's the politics of it all. I mean, of course, which is what's happening in terms of this new government.
Right. But Gur Bly,
he's not an elected official. Right?
Exactly. But he's not also recruited to any of the parties. He's just saying his legal,
unbiased opinion.
Opinion about the, it's a huge change in Israel regime. So he says, slow down. And he says, the changes that you are making, Simcha Rotman, MK Simcha Rotman, they are changing the balance of powers, in a drastic manner between the judicial system and the, executive and legislature branch. And therefore, it should be done more slowly and, as I said, take effect only after the next election. And Rotman is pushing back pretty strong at the moment. in the committee as we speak, he presents many examples to changes in basic clause that took effect immediately and not, you know, in the next, after the next election. So you have a couple of examples for that, such as, you know, when they changed back in like 3 years ago, when Netanyahu entered Benny Gantz into the government and they enacted the what we call the alternate prime minister's bill, which was, you know,
just to make it work.
Right. It wasn't a big change as presented at the moment, but it was a change, obviously, in the way the executive branch is functioning. And Rotman says, you know, come on, this bill was enacted in 2020 and it was, you know, it went into effect immediately. Nobody waited for another election. So, I mean,
using the examples as works for them, as appeals to their thinking at the moment.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks for that, Tal. Interesting development there. And Manny, tell us about the reported Saturday night drone attack that struck a defense facility in Iran. Reportedly, Israel was behind that attack. I know you don't have any sort of direct information yet, as far as I know. What can you tell us about it?
Right. So this kind of incident in Isfahan in Iran on Saturday night, according to Iranian media, Iranian official media, these small quadcopters that were equipped with explosives struck this facility. This is the official information that we know. According to Iran, one of the drones struck, two were shot down, but other reports suggested that there were three or four explosions that hit the facility. Regardless, according to the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and other reports, this facility housed basically a Iranian weapon site. So it was used to build ballistics missiles or other sort of weapons. Some reports also suggested it was a drone manufacturing site, but I believe it was more of the missiles that it was used for, basically to build them there. And it would not be the first time Israel's been accused of, or I would say cited as been behind sort of attacks in Iran, very similar ones. So according to American officials speaking to American media, they said that Washington was not behind the attack, and Israel was likely the one behind the attack. The New York Times reported today that it was the Mossad behind it, and they cited U.S. Intelligence officials as saying that basically Israel was behind this attack. And it comes following a series of sort of attacks against Iranian drone sites or missile sites in the past year.
Are these, in a sense, things, attacks that are meant to slow down the process? I mean, or how do we look at these? How do we measure these attacks, assuming that Israel is behind them?
So I would say it's definitely Israel trying to kind of curb Iran's attempts to build weapons that could be used against Israel. In this case, it would be a missile manufacturing site. So Israel would... I would assume Israel would want to prevent Iran from putting together these missiles. And in the past, we've also seen similar kind of explosions or drone attacks against Iranian nuclear sites, where there's centrifuges and et cetera, and other facilities. So it's just a very long shadow war that's been going on for quite a while now between Israel and Iran, where every so often a facility in Iran will explode mysteriously, and then a day later Israel will be blamed for it. So definitely something we've seen before, but another interesting incident that won't be the last one that we're seeing.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that. All right. We're going to close out today's daily briefing. Thank you, Manny, and thank you, Tal, for being with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow with another daily briefing. In the meantime, wishing you a good day.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time,
Shalom.